It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 176 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, and this week is a double feature. I've got interviews with two creators whose creations are coming out this Wednesday. First up is Ed Brisson, creator of The Mantle, a great book that I've had a chance to preview, and which I hope you'll pick up this Wednesday, May 13th. Then I talk with Joelle Jones, the creator of Lady Killer, and the final issue of this current mini-series, number 5, is also out this Wednesday. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Ed Brisson, the creator of many such good things and writer on The Prophet, on Peter Pan's and Faust, I hope I got that right, Sheltered Sons of Anarchy, and more recently, The Mantle. Oh, and he's got some little thing called Marvel Secret Wars Battle World that we'll talk about too before we get to the end. How are you doing today, Ed?
I'm all right. Actually, just a quick correction. I didn't write either Prophet or Peter Pan's Faust. I letter those. Actually, it's funny. I was just talking about this with Curtis the other day that I think because I'm also a writer and I do some lettering, a constant source of confusion with some people.
Confused me too, I guess.
You're far from the first, so don't worry.
Well, I got a kick when I was looking on a certain website. They referred to you as a Canadian letterer. And I wasn't quite sure what that meant. Does that mean you do it differently in Canada? You end every sentence with an A or something?
I add U's in every word.
Okay. Okay. We'll get to that. So anyway, the book we want to talk about, of course, is the one that's coming out this Wednesday from Image Comics called The Mantle. And it's an interesting take on superheroes. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the book's going to be about?
Sure. It's sort of based around the premise of like literally a mantle style power or legacy power, something that's passed down from one hero to the next. And our story sort of starts with Robbie. He's coming out of a punk show and he kind of gets struck by lightning, finds out that he is now this latest incarnation of the mantle, which is a superhero, the superpower that's passed down as the previous bearer dies. It finds itself a new host and he's the new host. And the power itself, we're trying to do something that I think is interesting with it, in that the power is sort of this limitless power that's limited only by the imagination of the person who has the power. So it manifests its way however they sort of would project it. Mm-hmm. So we follow Robbie for a bit as he gets these powers, realizes everything that's going on. And he is pretty super stoked about the whole thing until he realizes that he is the 38th guy to have these powers in the last 10 years. So mortality rate's quite high, turnover's high, chance of survival's quite low. Mm-hmm. And we sort of dive in there and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very good book. Big old surprise at the end, which I really loved. And I wouldn't dare spoil it here. But there's all kinds of good stuff going on. Before we get to the main character, why don't we talk about his supporting cast in this first issue? You've got a group of three heroes, basically, that come along when mm-hmm. he gets the power and basically try to get him on the straight and narrow path. Do you want to talk about those characters? Because they're a lot of fun, those ones are.
Yeah, so we have like three different characters who are basically, as we find out as we go on, are sort of the remnants of a superhero team that once was. We've got Cabra, who is like this Hulk-like woman who's incredibly intelligent, incredibly strong. We've got Necra. She's able to basically visit Purgatory. She can go to Purgatory and visit the dead. So in a lot of ways, she's sort of like a psychic, but rather than talking to them through a seance or what have you, she actually literally just visits Purgatory and visits these people. And one of my favorites is actually there's a character in there named Shadow, who, what he's able to do is he can sort of teleport between like any dark place, from one dark place to another. So, you know, he can walk into a shadow, walk out in any other shadow in the world. And that character, I'm stoked to have him in there, because that's actually a character I created when I was about 12 and sort of brought into this project when we got going on it. It was just a fun way to, you know, pay some respects to my inner child, I guess.
Okay. Because I like them all, but I have to say I like Cabra the best. She's kind of the make-things-happen person in the group.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's because when things come along and they need to move and he's not able to move very much, she just picks them up and takes them wherever they need to go. She's a lot of fun in that way, that all the other people kind of stand around and discuss stuff, but she's the one that makes everything move, which I like very much in her. But yeah, I like the guy with the shadow powers. That was unique. I liked that quite a lot, that he could move from shadow to shadow, which was really cool. Very, very much like that. So as we go along, of course, we get to know the main character more. And I did like the fact that he started out in some kind of a punk place. And he's kind of likes it seems like. But the girl he's with doesn't happen to care for it. And so they, when they get out, he kind of is in a kind of a drunken stupor. When he looks up, he sees this electrical force, like a rainbow-colored force, heading his way. She doesn't see it, but he does. And then, when it hits him, all kinds of wonderful things happen, including what appears to be visions of previous versions of this hero, which I really liked. And some of them allude to certain characters that I like. And so I really thought that was kind of fun. And of course, his reaction, because he's more or less a real person, is he vomits all over the place.
Yes.
Which, you know, most of us would do if he suddenly got struck by a bolt of lightning and all this stuff was going on. That would happen to us pretty quickly, too. So are you making sure that he is very much a real person in this book?
Yeah, I do. I want to try and keep like the characters grounded. And they of course, sort of step into this world where there's all this stuff sort of happening. That's quite fantastical, but, you know, they're still grounded. They're still real people with, like, real issues beyond supervillains trying to kill them or what have you. And sort of the reactions, you know, they're kind of torn. Like, you know, when he comes on, like, he doesn't know how to comprehend it at first, but then he's, you know, he's pretty excited. They have sort of, they get into it pretty quick. But, yeah, I obviously want to try and keep them as grounded as possible as well, mm-hmm. as much as possible. Yeah.
Because, you know, most of the time superheroes are just sort of, they rise to the challenge and they start spouting inspiring quotes and stuff like
yes.
that. He doesn't do any of that. He is basically, he loves the fact that he's gotten powers, but he's not entirely sure about it until he actually starts to use them, and then he begins to enjoy it. And so I like that because, you know, I can see a lot of us doing those kinds of things. You're sitting there, and all of a sudden you get imbued with powers, and of course, after you get past the initial burst of it, you kind of think, oh, man, this is kind of cool. And he, at one point, he actually turns when the villain shows up, and he says, that's my nemesis, he goes. You know, in other words, he's familiar with these kinds of things that happen to superheroes. They always get an opposite number. And he's ready to take on that person.
Absolutely.
I thought that was cool because he Thanks. Is, you know, we need to have heroes that are not as shiny as some of them have been. Because even certain heroes from different companies, all, you know, once they get into the gig, they buy into 100%. And he's surprised by a lot of things that happen to him because he kind of figures he's always going to win now that he's a hero. And that doesn't happen to him.
No. No, absolutely. And I feel that, yeah, they're not, you know, there's two sort of protagonists that we have going on, and they're not really going to buy into it wholesale. They're, you know, they're already established pretty early on that they're sort of a little bit anti-establishment. So, you know, they're not going to go in for this big superhero versus supervillain sort of lifestyle, I don't think. And it's really a lot of the book will be them sort of struggling with that and how to cope with the things that are thrown their way.
Now, one other thing about Robbie that I enjoy, especially after having seen Avengers Age of Ultron this past weekend, is his choice of language. He does. You know, Captain America probably wouldn't be very happy with him based on some of the stuff that he's saying. But again, you're trying to make him grounded and more realistic. And so those are the kinds of things a real person would say. So I kind of like that.
Thanks. Yeah. I try and keep him as much as, you know, as human as possible, as like a definitely an unlikely sort of hero. You know, like I said, you said earlier, we joined them sort of at a punk club, which is actually that is a punk club I used to spend a lot of time in my 20s. So
okay.
I brought that into there.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, let's talk about the bad guy, the Plague, he's called. And
yes.
From what I understand is this guy has made a habit out of killing this guy's predecessors.
That's right.
So he shows up. I mean, it doesn't take long after the power has been transferred to him that he basically shows up and continues on with his mission.
That's right. Yeah, and that's as the story goes forward, the next few issues, we get a bit more sort of insight into, you know, why exactly he's doing this. What, like, it's not just a hobby of his, I guess. Mm-hmm. There is, of course, an inciting incident in the past that has sort of set him on this path. And we'll get to see a bit more of him. But right now, he just seems to be this just sort of unstoppable killing machine that is just on their trail like a bloodhound. You know, as soon as a new mantle comes online, he's there to take him out.
Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, what he tries very hard to do in the book.
Yes.
So it's an interesting story. I really love the way you're started. Now, the question I need to know is this an ongoing series or is this a miniseries?
Well, we'll see. Brian and I hope to make it an ongoing. We've got some stuff mapped out, but, you know, it really just comes down to how well it sells. And we're happy with how it sold so far. So as long as that keeps up, then we'll keep it going for a while.
Very good. Very good. Now, you talked about Brian the artist, and I really liked his artwork in this book because it fits the tone of the story quite well. He's good at expression as well as action, and that's a hard combination for some folks to match. So I like the way that they do that, and even like a big explosion, it's kind of fun that the one guy who can go from shadow to shadow, we actually see his mask kind of in the silhouette as he goes on. So he's done a nice job of portraying the characters individually, as well as, you know, use of color and use of all kinds of action sequences and perspective and things like that. So I really thought he did a good job on this issue.
Yeah, he's a great artist. He's a dude, I've known him for quite a while, for I guess about 3 years. Like, he and I have been sort of talking about doing stuff together. He and I have done 3 short stories before this for the In the Dark anthology. We did something for Murder Book, which is a crime series that I write, and also for a book called Liberator that came out, I guess, last year. Mm-hmm. But he and I have been talking for a few years about trying to find a project to work on together. And this is a project that from inception, it's only been Brian who was involved, and so like as a potential artist, he's done most of the designs on the characters and all that stuff, and he's been great at that. I did that again, that one character I created when I was 12, I got to design that, but the rest is all him. And then Jordan Boyd has been doing all the colors, and Jordan and Brian have been working together for a little while. Even before the mantle, they've done some, I think, commission work and stuff together, and cover work together, and their stuff suits each other quite well.
Well, it's pretty sharp. Yeah, really good. I really liked it, the way they did it. I like particularly the bad guy's eyes are red.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. So wherever he looks, he just looks evil.
Yes, absolutely. He's supposed to be the most, just the evilest. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a very good book. If you like superheroes, you're really going to enjoy it because it's something different as far as superhero goes. And it always entertains me that even after all these decades, there are still takes on the superheroes we haven't read before. So I'm glad that you came up with this one and made it happen.
Thanks.
Very, very good. And the mail, of course, this Wednesday. So be sure to get to your store early to make sure you get the one of the copies they've ordered. And the mail will be out and hopefully be monthly for the foreseeable future because it's a good book. It's enjoyable to read and full of surprises, which is something I always love in a comic. So very good stuff.
Thank you.
Now, let's move on to this other little book that you've got going called Marvel's Secret Wars Battle World. Is that an ongoing series now?
I'm only writing a story in the first issue,
okay.
But I believe that it's a 4-issue mini. Each issue has 2 stories in it. In the issue that I am in, I split... I'm writing a 10-page story, and then Josh Williamson is writing another 10-page story in there as well. And that has been a lot of fun to do that. I got to do a MODOK story, which is MODOK in my house anyway. He's a household favorite, so is one that both my wife and daughter also are huge fans of. So it was kind of cool to have a chance to write that dude. It's a lot of fun to write.
Well, he's getting more popular these days. He's been on Avengers Assemble on Disney XD a lot these days. So you guys aren't the only ones that like him.
No, I wonder if it's just like a lot of guys coming up around the same time reading comics and just having a fascination, because that was definitely for me as a child, just being completely fascinated with, in a lot of ways, with the ridiculousness of the character.
Very cool. Now, do you want to talk a little bit about what the whole purpose of this issue is? You know, what your story is
sure.
to fulfill in Secret Wars?
Well, the whole thing with Battle World is, I guess, you know, going into Secret Wars, there's basically most of the planets have been destroyed, and there's this sort of a pastiche planet called Battle World, which is made up of different universes from Marvel. So, you know, you've got the Ultimate Universe, you've got the regular universe, you've got the Old Man Logan universe, all these alternate universes are sort of stitched together into one planet where people battle. I don't know how much is public knowledge quite yet. I guess the new issue comes out in a couple of days, so it's not really spoiling anything. But so what our stories were basically was that we had to just come up with interesting fights between these different universes using different characters. And so my plan was to have a rather than MODOK fighting, MODOK wants to take over, and so his ultimate plan is, if he can pull together all the different MODOKs from each of the lands, and then they could essentially form a huge brain trust to take over the world, and then go from there. And if you know MODOK, you know how egotistical and how much the dude likes to pontificate. And it goes about as well as you expect it might go when you got about 20 MODOKs in a room.
So it's kind of like when in Calvin and Hobbes, Calvin duplicated himself, and then
For sure,
he began to notice that all these other ones, they didn't want to do all the work either. I can't understand why they duplicated him. They didn't want to do that either. So it's kind of
absolutely
funny stuff. In this case, probably everybody wants to be in charge, and that means nobody gets to be in charge.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was a lot of fun to write. I worked with Scott Hepburn on it, who's a Toronto-based artist who's incredible. He did incredible work. And John Moyse was the editor, who was the one who actually hired me on to write that. And he was great to work with as well, was really supportive of the whole thing.
So is this the only issue in which you have a story, or are there other ones?
Yeah, I wrote a couple issues of Secret Avengers back at the end of 2013. Mm-hmm. So I've done this, and you know, hopefully there's more stuff down the road. Nothing at the moment, but it was great. It was a lot of fun, just even if that's the only thing that ever checks out. It was a lot of fun, and I got to tell a nice MODOK story.
Well, I was mentioning before we started to record that Secret Wars number one, last I'd heard, had orders of 550,000.
Which yeah, absolutely.
Is pretty phenomenal for comics these days. So if Battle World is a serious portion of that, boy, you'll be a happy guy.
I think so. I think that would be some nice cachet there for sure.
Yeah, that would be good. And maybe get some more work in the future from Marvel,
which is
never a bad thing.
Not at all.
Never a bad thing. So very good. So that will be out now. That's out this week as well.
Yeah, it's 13th. Comes out as well. So yeah, both on the same day, so that's not a bad day if you're me.
So Ed Brisson Wednesday this week.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, very good stuff. So I wanted to talk just a couple minutes about some of the other stuff you had done real quickly.
Sure.
Sheltered, I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing through, but I like the concept of it. And my understanding is that's come to a conclusion with issue number 15.
That's right, yeah. We ended it there.
Can you talk a little bit about what the concept was? It says on the subtitle is a pre-apocalyptic tale, which I like.
Yeah, well, it's where the sort of idea for it came is that I was kind of researching because I wanted to do a post-apocalyptic story. I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic type stuff like Mad Max and all that sort of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something again that was grounded a bit more in reality. And so I started researching doomsday preppers to see how people who are actually trying to prepare for these cataclysmic events or potential like a societal breakdown and how they're preparing for it. And I was researching them just to see how they would react, how they'd go, what they'd do. And I just started to get really fascinated with that sort of culture and wanted to do a book about that. So Johnny Christmas, the artist on Sheltered, and I sat in a studio one night and just sort of batted around ideas for books. And I'd mentioned how I'd been reading up a lot on these guys, researching them quite a bit. And I had this idea mostly about the kids and what it would be like to be them, to be prepared almost your entire life for the end of the world and to possibly try and survive anything that didn't ultimately end up killing all of humanity. and sort of what it would be like to be raised under that sort of umbrella and under that, you know, almost like that storm cloud that it's happening one day. Mm-hmm. That'll almost be, you know, being raised that way, it almost be a bummer if the end of the world didn't come around. Mm-hmm. And so from there, we sort of built out the story about these kids raised in this environment, and they think the end's coming, and it's about how they react. I don't want to spoil it too much for anyone who hasn't read the first issue, because there's a thing that happens in the first issue that's pretty intense, and it's not, I don't think, expected. And it's just how they deal with the fallout from these sort of drastic measures that they take that eventually almost brings about the thing that they feared.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And it intrigues me because, especially in these days when zombies and apocalyptic things are so big, it's nice. It would be nice to see somebody actually setting something up rather than, you know, we always see the aftermath. We never know how things get that way.
Right.
And it'll be nice to actually see somebody talk about it before it happens. And not necessarily explain how everything happens, but to see what happens before the big disaster.
So exactly.
That's something different. I like the sound of that. I'm going to have to track that down and get a chance to read that. So that sounds good.
Thanks.
Now, one more book of yours that I'm kind of interested in is one that you wrote and self-published. And it came out in 3 volumes. It's called Murder Book.
That's right. Yeah, and it actually just came out last month. Dark Horse put together a collection of it, which includes those 3 issues, plus about 100 pages of extra content of stuff that had been published in various other places over the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Murder Book, it's a crime book, and I'm a huge crime fan, and it was sort of born out of my own frustration with pitching comics back in 2010. I'd been pitching to publishers for a couple of years, trying to get a series going, like just anything, and nothing was landing. And I just kind of got frustrated with it and decided I would just start doing comics on my own and not really waiting to get published. And I'd already self-published stuff in the past. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't necessarily anything new to me, but I had always written and drawn my own stuff. And this is the first time where I'd switched over just to writing. Mm-hmm. And so I started writing these crime stories, and I teamed up with some artists, Simon Roy, Michael Walsh, Vic Malhotra, Johnny Christmas, and Jason Copeland were the first batch of artists I teamed up with. And we did these stories, and I would just, once they were done, I'd throw them up online for free. I would do some print collections for when I was doing conventions and stuff. And it was sort of through those books that I actually finally started getting attention from publishers. So that wasn't necessarily my intention. Obviously, it's also always a good thing. But yeah, it was just a thing I wanted to do to kind of show people I could write. And as I said, I was always a crime fan, and publishers tend to shy away from crime books because they don't tend to sell quite as well as other titles. And yeah, so I self-published that for 5 years, and then Dark Horse, about a year ago, signed it up to publish. We did 4 new murder book stories that ran in Dark Horse Presents, and then they collected it all and put out the collection back in end of March.
You have to be after that, because I do like crime stories myself, so I'm going to have to be after that, because I like that. And from what I'm gathering when talking with you is that you like to do things that aren't quite, you like to color outside the lines occasionally, which is a great thing.
Sure, yeah, I'll take that.
Very good. Because I've read many stories over the years that I've read comics, and there's nothing worse than suddenly going, oh, here we go, we're going to go back to such and such again. So whenever I find somebody who can do something a little different, I'm just drawn to it tremendously. So I'm going to have to catch up with Murder Book here pretty quickly.
Awesome.
Are there any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
I have another book that's coming out right now through Boom. It's called Cluster.
Oh.
And it's a sci-fi book. It's set sort of in undefined point in the future where Earth is trying to colonize other planets as they're wont to do. Mm-hmm. We're living in a future where both the prison system and the military are privatized. Mm-hmm. They sort of feed into one another, where the military has burned through their soldiers while fighting an alien force and start conscripting prisoners to fight and to help colonize this planet, which still needs to sort of be terraformed to bring it up to code, essentially, so that humans can occupy it. And it follows a senator's daughter who is sent to prison for a crime that we're not 100% clear on what the crime is at first, but that's peeled back over the first 4 issues. Yeah, it's about her on this planet where she's trying to just serve her time. And as happens, everything goes wrong and she ends up sort of stranded with a couple other prisoners and trying to fight their way back into the prison.
Well, what I like, they describe it as a series for fans of old school hard-boiled action.
Yes.
Which I like. I think that's a great way to describe it. That's, man, I'm just missing you by just a little bit because I read about Cluster, but I hadn't had a chance to read it yet.
Oh, so there we go.
I'm going to have to track down all these good things because they all sound really interesting. And now, how many issues are out right now?
The fourth issue comes out tomorrow, which is our tomorrow when we're talking, would be May 6th. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, May 6th is issue 4, and then there is no issue in June. It's a skip month, so the next issue will be out early in July.
So, my goodness, you have three comics coming out this Wednesday.
Well, one
it just came out. It just came out the past Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's still 2 weeks in a row. You've got good stuff coming out.
Oh, yeah.
So, man, that's great. I like that. So, I'm going to be after this. I'm going to have to find this. They sound good to me, and I really like them. So, one last thing I wanted to chat with you real briefly about. I went to your website, and you describe yourself in an interesting way, I thought, on the website. You call yourself the Wizard of Words, the Ruler of Naps, which I like. I think that was a great little sentence. Do you want to talk about that just a little bit?
It's a pun on a Run DMC lyric where DMC calls himself the Wizard of Words, the Ruler of Raps.
Oh.
And I take a nap a day, usually. So I just screwing around with that a little bit.
Look, I had no idea because I'm not much on Run DMC music. I haven't heard much of it. So I just liked the way it sounded. I thought it was kind of funny. So I like that good stuff. So. Well, very good. Well, Ed, here's hoping you have a lot more success in the future. And I'm going to catch up with your books because they really sound interesting to me, and I'm going to get onto it. And this week I'll have to get both of those books so I can read them and be up to date on them. So you're doing good stuff, so please keep up the great work that you're doing.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. I'm flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Welcome to the podcast, Joel Jones, artist of such good things as You Have Killed Me, and Helheim, and Brides of Helheim from Oni Press, and Lady Killer from Dark Horse, who, by the way, I want to thank for setting up this interview. How are you doing today, Joel?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's good to talk with you. As I was telling you just before we started recording, I didn't realize that it was you that did the artwork on You Have Killed Me, which came out, what, 2009?
Yeah, it feels like ages ago now.
Well, it's a great little story. The back says it all. There's a little sentence that says he wanted to tell her he loved her, but all he could say was, "You have killed me," which I thought was great. It was a great story, lots of surprises along the way, lots of twists and turns. So I really enjoyed that. Was that one of your first projects, or how did you get into comics?
Well, it wasn't my first. I'd done a few things before that. I actually got my start in comics at Dark Horse on little things here and there, and then I did a book called 12 Reasons Why I Love Her at Oni, and that's where I developed a friendship with Jamie, and we ended up collaborating for years together.
Mm-hmm. Very good, because it's a lot of good stuff that you've been doing. Now, you went to work on Helheim and Brides of Helheim with Cullen Bunn, so all that stuff is really good. I've enjoyed all those books, and Mr. Bunn, he's able to write a crazy story,
like very few
people.
Yeah,
bananas. He's funny because he handles villains and great characters so much better than many other people do. So what was it like when you started working on Helheim and Brides of Helheim with him?
It's been so much fun. I really enjoy working on that book. Every script, I get really excited to get every script from Cullen just because I don't know where the story's going to go. And yeah, she's been really exciting and just bananas, the kind of creatures he comes up with and, you know, where the story's going to go is fantastic.
Do you like supernatural stories? Because these are two very different kinds of storytelling. You know, a supernatural one versus a murder mystery. Do you like different kinds of storytelling? Is there anyone that's a favorite of yours?
No, not really. I think there's stuff I tend not to like, but I think I enjoy more than I dislike.
Okay, that's good. So why don't we go ahead and jump into Lady Killer, which I really liked. I got a chance to read that, which I loved. I've read the first four issues now, and the fifth one's going to be coming out. Has the fifth one been scheduled yet?
Yeah, I finished it. I can't remember, and I have no idea when it comes out. Sometime this month. I just don't remember when.
Okay. All right. Is that, you're talking May?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, good. For people who may not have read the book, why don't you kind of give the TV Guide version of what Lady Killer is all about?
It's about a 1960s housewife that is also an assassin on the side, and her family doesn't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit, the great thing about it is I can describe it in one sentence, which always comes in handy.
Now, it's kind of funny to me because you're co-writing this one. Is this your first co-writing project?
Yeah.
How did that happen? How did you move from being an artist into a co-writer?
Well, actually, I came up with the idea for Lady Killer maybe 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and I was busy doing other projects and never got the chance to get to it. But in the meantime, I was always drawing it and writing it on my own. Mm-hmm. Now, when it came down to the nitty-gritty of actually doing the work, I wanted some assistance with dialogue and a little hand-holding because I'd never written before. So I brought Jamie on to kind of walk me through the process.
Now, Jamie is Jamie who?
Jamie Rich, sorry.
Okay, well, I'm going to make sure I get everybody's names in here. Now, it's interesting you say that because I have written a couple of scripts, and I've actually written for a fan film for Star Trek. And you're right about the dialogue. I was terrified of the dialogue.
Yeah,
especially with known characters, you know, like all these people are. I just struggled. And I had a friend of mine that wrote with me. And he helped me get the dialogue down straight, thankfully. Because I was, you know, if you get those kind of characters wrong, boy, people are going to know right away that you've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
Now, Lady Killer, of course, in the 60s and stuff. I think there's a great thing about period pieces and going back and looking at that because, you know, women in the 60s weren't viewed as very much more than objects at that point. And so you're doing that, you're kind of broadening the, not to be punny, but to the perspective of women back in that time period, that the truth is we've always known that women could do much more than that some guys would like to think. You know, Lois Lane was a reporter back in the 40s, and all these kinds of things have gone on. Were you trying to show that kind of a thing, that women back in that time period were more than what we remember them being?
No, I really didn't have big, huge, broad intentions. Mm-hmm. When I sat down to do the book, mostly I just wanted to set in that time period to kind of, it adds a lot of conflict, I think. And I mean, I really wanted to draw the clothes and enjoy the period, but I think it adds a lot of conflict to set her in a time period where most women were feeling suffocated and mm-hmm. she had an outlet, whether it's a morally right outlet, but an outlet.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, you have a nice website, joellejones.com. And one of the things you do is you have Lady Killer ads. Mm-hmm. Which are great fun. You know, the first one you get is this, he will never complain that his dinner is late again, and you've got a bottle of arsenic there with him, and he's not even paying attention that that's what she's doing with him and stuff. I always get a kick because my mom always was, in that time period, much brighter than a lot of people gave her credit for, and the terrible truth was that she did a lot of things, and she functioned in the household a lot better. You know, the men would go out and they would raise the money and come home. And they always looked at the women as just sort of around the house kind of stuff. But, you know, I do like the fact that your character shows that there was a lot more to women at that time, probably always too, than we give them credit for back at that point. But where'd you get the inspiration from for the story?
Well, I've always been a big fan of illustration during that time period. And I was raised very traditionally to be a wife and a mother role. Mm-hmm. While I, you know, didn't live through the period, I definitely sympathize with some of the feelings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the fact that she does these things and nobody really suspects her at all. She's got interestingly enough, though, there's an interesting contrast between her home life and her business life. They're forever trying to promote her in her business life. And she doesn't want to do that. All she wants to do is do her little job and do that successfully. And they keep trying to promote her, and she doesn't want that. And I got a big kick out of that because that's the two lives that she has are very much different from each other. But in a way, of course, that's kind of fulfilling, I suppose, when she can do these things and have people asking her to go out and take more responsibility, even though she doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, I think, one of the trickiest things about being an adult is trying to find balance. And if she's found a balance for herself and people keep trying to take that away from her, I think it would put her in a sticky place.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, 5 issues in this miniseries. Are you planning to do more with this character in the future?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I really enjoy it. I'm having a lot of fun. So, there's a possibility.
Okay, good. Because Dark Horse is a great place to be able to go and find stories unlike anybody else is telling. I like so many of the books that are there. There's Captain Midnight, which I enjoy, from Joshua Williamson. There are several others. Of course, Pastaways is just coming out from Matt Kent and from Scott Collins. And your book is one of those in there, too, that I think if you want a variety in your reading, you need to be able to pick up things like Lady Killer to be able to get the stories that don't go where you expect them to go.
Yeah, and they've been really great to work with. I think one of the biggest notes that my editor always gives me is don't get bound to doing something you don't want to do. Go crazy. Have a good time. And nobody's ever telling me how to write the story or how to draw it in any way. I have total freedom.
Well, that's great. I mean, it must be a lot of fun as a comics creator to be able to let them say to you, well, just do whatever you like.
Yeah, it's really great.
Because I've talked to other people who work in other companies, and they'll leave those companies because they don't get the freedom that they like. They can't tell the stories they want to tell. So they'll go somewhere that will let them do that. So that's great that you've already found places to do that for you.
Oh, yeah. It's been fantastic.
Now, I'm just kind of curious because one of my big things, and I recently talked with some other women creators in comics about women in comics as a profession. And I'm kind of fascinated by that because I don't think we have nearly enough women working in comics or enough women lead characters. So when I came across your stuff, I was very pleased to see that not only as both of you working on the book that lead up the book are women, but you've also got a woman character in charge.
And Jamie's actually a guy.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I'll make sure that he hears about it.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Well, it's funny that the story is such. As far as like being a woman working in the comics industry, you know, what was it like? How did you get into the industry? Do you think that you've worked harder than your male counterparts? How did that come to, you know, what's been your perception of how that's happened?
You know, I would have no idea if I had to work harder or if I get paid less or, you know, I really don't know. I've had a great experience and I've never really felt like I'm working any harder than my male counterparts.
Mm-hmm. What about women characters? Have you favored women characters as you've read comics over the years?
Yeah, I never did gravitate towards any of the female-driven comics. I mean, I appreciate them, but I grew up reading Punisher. So it was never really my, I love a lot of female characters, but it was never my go-to.
Interesting, because you could almost see a little bit of Punisher in your character in Lady Killer. Some of that.
Oh, well, I take that as a compliment.
Yeah. So it's kind of fun. So are there other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of? Because as I said, I didn't realize you had written You Have Killed Me until I was going through some books and I pulled it out and I went, wait a second, that's her there to do all that good stuff. So what other projects are you working on that we should be aware of?
Well, I'm doing Brides of Helheim. I'm actually drawing it right now.
Oh, wow.
I've got a bunch of other stuff I can't really talk about too much, but little things here and there, yeah.
Okay, so you're keeping busy, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to ask you something, and I ran into this when I talked to Babs Tarr, who does Batgirl. She said that when she would go to comic stores, she would often ask them to recommend books to her. And they struggled to do that with her. And I joked with her, and I said, well, maybe now if you were to do that, they might give you your book. You know, Batgirl for a chance like that. Did you find that growing up and getting into the industry? Because you said Punisher was one of your big thing. Were you taken as seriously maybe as a comics fan as the guys might be, or were you part of the group when that happened?
Well, I went to a regular shop for a while. Mm-hmm. And they didn't speak English, so it sort of worked out. I would never know. But as I grew up, there were a lot of books that I did not care for put in my hands that were definitely like, these are for girls. Like, I'm not interested in those kind of books. But I found that, and for me, luckily, probably it exposed me to a lot of different types of reading, trying to find stuff on my own.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of books did they give you, may I ask?
Oh, gosh. I know one time they were quite bold and they gave me like Marvel Romance. Now that I'm older, I've actually reread them and I quite enjoy them. The art's gorgeous in a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of, like X-Babies and really cutesy type stuff, which has never been anything I've been drawn to.
Mm-hmm. That's wild. And you would tell them, well, I would like Punisher. What have you got like the Punisher? And how would they react?
Yeah, they would put Preacher in my hands after that or, you know. Stuff like that. But, you know, I had to really kind of let them know what I was interested in.
Mm-hmm. Do you still have that problem if you go, do you buy a lot of product from other companies and other people? Do you keep
up with
some? I do,
yeah.
Well, who else do you like that's creating books right now?
Oh my gosh, there's way too many to name. And it's that thing of you're always, when you're put on the spot, you can't think of a single one.
Of course.
I still get really excited to go to the comic book shop and I run out and grab whatever. I mean, I'm so excited about a lot of Image titles. Mm-hmm. And I just got to read Harrow County, which is fantastic.
Mm. One of the things I was hoping to get to ask you, too, were as far as like other women creators in comics, which other women in comics do you like or do you emulate or would you like to get together with and work on projects with?
I hadn't put too much thought about seeking out women in particular.
Okay.
There's a lot of creators that I'd like to work with, but I try not to favor one gender over the other.
Okay.
In terms of specific projects.
What about any books that you would like to write if you had got or draw if you had the opportunity?
Oh gosh, that's tricky. That I'm not sure.
What about superheroes? If you got to do superheroes, would you want to do superheroes?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten the opportunity to do it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to do like a Spider-Man story, which was a blast. Mm-hmm. And then a short Superman story. And then one of the Batman 66, which was so much fun.
Mm. Well, that's right in your time period.
Yeah, I try not to think too much about like, yeah, exactly. It was a Batgirl story too, which was a blast. But yeah, I try not to get my hopes up. Mm-hmm. I know nobody's doing Commandy stories, mm-hmm. but God, that'd be awesome. But I don't think they're ever going to bring that back. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's mm-hmm. tricky to say.
Okay. Because I've got, I'm always fascinated by how the creative process works and stuff like that. And so for me, I find your artwork so fascinating and interesting, and all the different kinds of storytelling that you can do. And so I just think that, you know, if anybody hasn't seen your work, they really need to start picking it up. And I would say go to your website too, because your website has lots of cool artwork on it too, so you can get used to your things. Do you keep that updated? I noticed that you have a Twitter account. Do you keep the website updated, or do you tend to do things on Twitter to let people know what you're up to?
I tend to tweet pictures of my dogs a lot on Twitter and complain about people on public transit.
Okay.
And my website's, it's pretty, I mean, it's like, it's usually within 6 months updated.
Okay.
But Twitter's a good place. I usually talk about like reviews and books I'm reading, and it's not just complaining and pictures of dogs.
See, it's funny though, when I talk to people in comics, they're often kind of saying, oh, I wish I could do Spider-Man, or I wish I could do so-and-so, in the hopes that somebody from that company might be listening and do that kind of stuff. And so that's why I was kind of thinking maybe there were some secret wish that you had that you might, you know, you were just kind of hoping maybe somebody from such and such a company might be listening, that they would give you a shot at such and such a character.
I think, especially how I feel right now about where I'm at in my career and what I like to do, is I want to try as many different genres and as many different things as possible. And I would hate to get hemmed in doing one character for a really long time. I'm really enjoying Lady Killer, and that's been a blast, and I want to keep it up if possible, but I also want to try all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. What would you ever do if somebody came to you and said, hey, we want to turn Lady Killer into a TV show?
Yeah, do they have a check in their hand?
That's the thing about these things, that people get, they option these things to do, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's ever going to show up, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always like, yeah, it's a lot of run around and talk, and nothing ever gets done.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I love working in comics, because you run around talking. you know, mm-hmm. a few months later, you got a book. So.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, one thing too, because have you written much before Lady Killer? Because when I've seen you've been doing largely artwork.
Yeah, no, I haven't written a thing before Lady Killer.
Yeah, and you said you got your friend to help you with the dialogue and stuff. As far as like the storytelling goes and things like that, did you consult with anybody about that? Did Jamie help you with that? He was basically just for dialogue, or you had these stories in your head and you just needed to get somebody to provide the voices for a couple people?
Well, I had a definite roadmap of kind of how I saw it going, and definitely like specific visual scenes and, you know, things I really wanted to do. And he sort of helped me kind of like plot it out and figure out best ways to do that. He'd throw out some ideas and I'd throw out some ideas. So, you know, it was a lot of verbal collaboration until it came down to him making the dialogue sound so much better than I could do.
Because I thought the dialogue on like the neighbors and the coworkers and stuff was particularly sharp on those kinds of things, because you could hear people's voices when they said the kind of things that they did.
Yeah.
And her boss, you know, the main guy that's in charge of what she does is just such a fiend and such a rotten, no good guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of was like, you know, you sort of wonder, is the last thing she's going to do is put him out of her misery, you know, kind of stuff. So the fun thing about the way that you're writing the book and the way the book comes together is that we don't know what's going to happen next. And I love a book that doesn't predict what's going to happen. If I can sit there and say, well, you know, by the end of the book, such and such is going to happen, then there's no point in reading the book.
Yeah.
But with Lady Killer, I have to say, I don't know what you're going to do in the fifth issue. I really don't. And I always love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do too. And I think being bored by something is the worst possible sin I think you can commit in storytelling. So.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah. So the first thing I try to do is entertain myself.
Okay.
And then hopefully it'll pass down to other people.
Is that what you recommend? Because, you know, as an artist who is now writing and stuff, is that what you might recommend? Let's say there are women listening that want to get into the comics industry. What would you recommend to them that they do as far as, you know, breaking into the industry? And like you talked about entertaining yourself. Is that kind of something that that you would recommend to other folks?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think when writing, I think that's really important. And I also think that whether it's writing or drawing, I think you have to do it every day with a fervor. And I came up I was a bartender for years and had to draw on the side. And, you know, I drew every day and still do. So.
Wow, that's great. So do you work for a living now as a writer-artist, or do you have other stuff that you do as well to kind of help ends meet?
No, this is it.
This is it. Okay, well, that's great. Not everybody can do that. So, boy, that's a great place you've reached in order to be able to do that. So, well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That's great stuff. So, will this get collected into a trade or a hardcover?
Yeah, it is. I think it's going to come out in September, if I remember right.
That's a good time because it's right in front of the holiday season. So,
yeah,
you can recommend everybody buy these and give these out for the holidays. So, that'll be a great time to do that.
Yeah.
You said you've got other projects in the pipeline, but you can't really talk about them at the moment. Can you give any ideas? Are you going to vary the genre of what it is you're going to be working on in the future? And can you give us like an idea? Are you going to sci-fi or anything like that, maybe?
I can't. No, I think if I were to talk about it, I might give it away too much.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, don't get in trouble. Let's don't. don't lose any work over this. I really want to make sure that, because I enjoy your work and I want to be able to read more of it and be able to buy more of it. So we'll do that kind of stuff. So, well, your work is terrific, and I really love it, and I'm glad I got the chance to talk with you, Joelle. And, man, I hope you have a lot of success in the future, and things just get better and better, and we see your name more and more on the comics and that we're buying in the future.
Thanks. I hope so, too.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week when I'll have another great interview with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.